If you listen to the show, you already know that we cannot exist without our sponsors. They are the ones who make things happen behind the scenes. So let's acknowledge Fuji Sports. We've been working with these guys for a while now, not only as far as this podcast is concerned, but also at the Roll Academy. We've had their gear. I personally use their gis. What a phenomenal product.
Yeah, I mean, jiu-jitsu, judo, MMA, tape, bags, anything you need for your jiu-jitsu journey, you can find at fujisports.com.
Let's talk Roll TV. There's so much content on there. It's ridiculous at this point. But I think what is even more intriguing, as time went on during the project, we've been recording most of the events that were taking place here at Roll Academy. At this point, I mean, we have guys like Chris Howder, Armin Fadi, Rafael Lovato Sr., and Pete the Greek. I mean, there are so many different events that we've kind of recorded it. Don't you think that's amazing? I mean, points of reflection and kind of going back for all the students to see what really happened and refresh their memory.
Yeah, I think it's great, you know, being able to go back and look at all these high-level practitioners, Octavio Cudo, like one of the names you didn't mention. And I mean, just these guys that have been doing this for so long come in, teach these amazing seminars and workshops, and it's all recorded and there for you to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you want to get an additional savings on all this, type in code ROLLRADIO at the coupon and get additional 30% off of your membership.
Nice. Go to rollacademy.tv. What's up, everyone, and welcome back. If you haven't already, please remember to hit the like, share, subscribe, download, listen, and whatever other button there is, and leave us a review wherever you do listen. That ensures that we can continue bringing you the great guests and amazing content that you have come to expect. While still a white belt, today's guest knew she was going to make jiu-jitsu her career. So, after a year of training, she moved across the country to train with the best. Heather Morgan joins us to discuss leaving her world behind to train at the world-famous Atos Academy, her belief that she has the power to do whatever she wants, being a role model, visualizing your goals, and a ton more. Here's the Roll Radio with Andre Galvo, black belt, online instructor, and multi-time world champion, Heather Morgan.
Welcome to Roll Radio.
And we are live.
You almost messed up the clap. You were going to do it.
The count messed me up on this.
The count?
Yeah,
the count. It's just a countdown from five.
I know, but it
just... How did that mess you up?
I don't know. I don't know.
All right. That's what anyhow. This is what I have to deal with. You always say that you have to deal with me. This is what I have to deal with. You can't handle a countdown for five, and I'm supposed to help you run the business here.
Listen, it is what it is. It is what it is.
Okay.
Another phenomenal guest today, Heather. Thank you for being here. We just recently spoke with Rose, and I know you guys are quite close, training and on a personal level. There's a great connection there. Well, first of all, how are you doing in a great state of California?
Oh man, I'm doing great. The weather here is beautiful. Finally, it's feeling more like spring, summer. I really can't complain.
Well, that's good. Your story is so interesting. And as far as I know, at least what I was able to dig out from a research perspective, you literally moved across the country. I mean, literally across the country with the purpose of pursuing jiu-jitsu.
Mm-hmm. I did. Yeah.
Are you crazy?
I mean, a little bit. It was a leap of faith for sure. Yeah, for sure. It was an adventure. Yeah. It's crazy. It's been almost 10 years now that I did that. So yeah. I've been in San Diego for a long time. Cause I mean, I moved out here as a white belt. I'd been training for about a year and I decided I wanted to pursue jiu-jitsu full time. And now I'm a black belt. So it's crazy. Like time passes so quickly. But yeah, I mean, it was a wild ride for sure. You know,
before we get to the true reasonings behind that decision now, mm-hmm. in the retrospect, 10 years later, you live in the life, you're living the dream. You literally achieved what you wanted to do. I mean, like all jokes aside,
people dream about things and most of them don't achieve what they want. And I mean, talk about being a lucky cat. I mean, like in a retrospect, 10 years later, how do you feel about all of this? Good decision? Regrets?
I mean, I can't say that I think about it in that way very often. I probably should, you know, and just be more grateful for how far I've come. I think we get stuck, you know, just thinking about what we want to achieve next. So I think it's good to take time and like look back and see how far you've come. I don't really look at it as luck because, you know, it's just a reality I wanted to make for myself. So it just took me kind of imagining what I wanted and then just going after it, taking the steps that I needed to. And I've definitely, I mean, it's crazy to think back on even just my first day of jiu-jitsu 10 years ago. And just, if you told me back then, you know, this is where I'd be, I'd think you were crazy. I think like, that's sick, you know, but I think you're crazy for saying that. It's just, it's been quite the journey. And I'm super happy with where I'm at. Obviously, I've accomplished a lot of goals that I wanted to accomplish. And I have so much more that I want to do. I mean, that's always how it is. It's like a balance between being grateful for how far you've come, but then also motivated to reach for even more goals, you know. So it's definitely a balance there.
Well, so 10 years later, obviously there was a point of success. There is point of achievement that you even talk about now. You know, you've done things that you really dreamt about. But I think what is really mind-blowing about your story is that most of the time, at least from the conversations we've had on this show, people bridge into this jiu-jitsu profession in a sense, or chasing jiu-jitsu, you know, really being in it and making these life-changing decisions way later into their jiu-jitsu journey.
Yeah.
Yours was like, whoa, at the very beginning.
I hit the ground running.
I know. You're like, screw all this stuff. I'm going after this, right? Like, so you come out of school as I understand. You get your degree. Tell us the story. Why am I telling your story? I mean, you know, you get a job and then things change. Like there's this moment, right? So tell me the story.
Yeah. So, I mean, I remember really being into sports my whole life. I actually did competitive gymnastics. I started when I was 5. So I did that all the way through high school. And then I remember when I was coming up on graduation, I didn't really have anything I wanted to pursue. I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life. I was going into the kind of the next step and I didn't really know what my passion was yet. So I decided to go to college just to sort of try to figure that out, explore the world a little bit. And I knew I was very into being active and everything. So I decided to major in health and exercise science. So I was like, oh, like, I'll just, you know, teach people like how to lift and do that kind of thing. And then I can at least still lead an active lifestyle, you know? Mm-hmm. So fast forward, 4 years later, I graduate with my degree. I get hired to work at a gym as a personal trainer in South Carolina. South Carolina is where I was living when I was in high school. So I just did an internship there and then ended up moving back there when I got the job.
So it's convenient, easy, right? I mean,
exactly. Mm-hmm. And I mean, even at this point, like I was actually born in San Jose. So in my head, I was thinking, okay, I'll go to South Carolina, you know, do this job for a little bit. And then the goal is to get out to California, like hopefully maybe just stay there a year. You know, that was like always in my head. And so I start working at this gym. I get my certification to be a CrossFit instructor too. So I was doing that. I was teaching CrossFit classes, personal training. The gym I got hired at just happened to also have jiu-jitsu. And one of my bosses was just super into jiu-jitsu. So he just had like a small gym within the gym, a mat area. So I was just kind of in there, you know, training clients, working out a ton, you know, getting in shape, trying to get that competitive edge, like with just doing the CrossFit stuff, you know, because you can get like beat your time and everything. So I was like, okay, like this is scratching the itch a little bit. Like I still have that competitiveness. But I'd always look over at the mat and be like, what's going on over there? Like that looks kind of weird. These guys just sort of like rolling around in pajamas. And I don't know, it looks kind of intriguing, but I don't know. It looks kind of weird too, but I would go and like watch them a little bit in between clients. And I started talking to some of the guys who are training and they convinced me to try it. Honestly, it didn't take too much convincing because I was like, okay, let's see what this is about. So finally I try it one day and I remember the technique we were learning was a flying triangle.
Oh, great. On your first day. Oh, great. Thumbs. That's awesome.
So like the very first technique I learned in jiu-jitsu was a flying triangle. I don't even do flying triangles now. Like I don't use this. Like, I mean, it would be cool. Maybe I should add it back in. But yeah, so I remember learning that and thinking, this is so sick. Like, what have I been doing? I'm just like flying and like submitting and stuff. So I remember I was sold right away. Like first day I was already sparring and, you know, just tiring myself out, trying to pass the guard and stuff. So I remember just, you know, immediately finding that joy in this new sport and just being hooked right away, you know, like it immediately took up all my thoughts, you know, just like it does for most people. It kind of takes over your brain and all you can think about is the next time you're going to go to training, what you're going to try in class. So I remember just right away wanting to be on the mat as much as possible and just realizing, wow, I think I just found my passion, you know, because I enjoyed what I was doing. I enjoyed the personal training, but it didn't like light a fire in me like mm-hmm. jiu-jitsu did. And I remember thinking, this is what it feels like. This is what it feels like to find the thing that you're supposed to do, you know? And I remember sitting down and just having this thought of, okay, like I could do the safe thing. And I could just stay in my career that I went to school for. I already have a stable job. I can just do that. Or I could do the thing that makes me happy. And I have the power to do whatever I want. You know, I can go the other way and I can pursue this thing that really fulfills me. So that's when I realized this is what I need to do. You know, so it took me about a year.
How old are you at that point?
So I found jiu-jitsu when I was 22 turning 23. So nowadays that's old. You're like a black belt already by that age, but
but there is something interesting about this entire story, that the fact that at 22, 23, early 20s, you mm-hmm. are making decisions that have impact for the rest of your life. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know many 20-year-olds who can say, listen, screw all this. I can play safe. Or I can take the risk. No, I'll play safe. I mean, you know, like it's so much easier to just lean on the safety net. It's so much easier to lean on the no risk decisions. And yet you are going the opposite direction. Before we move forward, because that's going to be the pivot point. I am actually curious. What's the first class like? I mean, I know you're doing flying triangles, and I know it's amazing. Going airborne is just mind blowing, yeah. Right? But you come from one very physically oriented activity, which is CrossFit and personal training. I mean, this is all about mechanics, efficiency, and then power, right? And you're going mm-hmm. into something that many people actually consider complete opposite, right? Mm-hmm. Where physicality is present, but the mechanics and technique is really what drives the success in jiu-jitsu, right? What is your perspective the first day, first week, when you're getting into this, being mm-hmm. used to lifting weights and going, you know, you're pushing physicality, right? And here, well, we know how that works out, but what's in your mind?
I think for me, it reminded me more of the days that I did gymnastics. It felt like, wow, I can do a sport again. I can fight someone and win. And I think for me, it reminded me of that more than the lifting and that kind of thing. It's like the lifting, I love that, but it wasn't quite the same. It wasn't quite what I was looking for. So for me, it felt like almost a sigh of relief to then be able to do this sport where I am learning technique. I'm having to use my full body, which for gymnastics, I mean, it's extremely physical. You know, you've got the strength, the balance, all the techniques you have to learn. So for me, it was more of a parallel to that. And it reminded me, oh, wow, like I can learn new things and I can use my body again. And I can use all of my attributes that I have that I've learned from, you know, doing gymnastics for so many years. And I can figure out a game that, you know, uses those strengths. So for me, it felt like that. It felt like a relief to be doing something that was more physical and more fluid, you know, and it reminded me of gymnastics. And I remember thinking, wow, this is not as dangerous as gymnastics was. Cause I mean, gymnastics, you're flying through the air. And now, I mean, I've done jujitsu long enough to realize there's so many risks too. I mean, it's fairly safe. Like if for a sport, you know, you can kind of, you know, what reactions to expect from the person. But for me, just coming from a background of gymnastics, I thought, wow, like I'm not flying through the air, but I can still be aggressive and move and everything. So yeah, for me, it reminded me more of the gymnastics than the lifting.
Do you think that because of the gymnastic background, there is this very appealing taste behind of jiu-jitsu? Like, would the response be the same if you didn't do gymnastics? Did gymnastic contribute in some factor, you know, some fashion in your mind, at least, as you entering this crazy world of pajamas and rolling on the floor?
Oh yeah. It for sure helped so much. Yeah. I mean, gymnastics, it pretty much prepares you for any sport you want to enter into. So for me, I was just grateful that I'd had all these years in another sport. I felt like I didn't know anything about grappling. I had no previous experience in that, but I knew how to move my body. I had really good awareness of, you know, where I'm at and, you know, control my muscles and just body awareness in general, balance, good flexibility, because I initially started just playing mostly guard. So I felt just fully prepared to dive into this new sport. So many differences, you know, because the pacing is so different with jiu-jitsu. Gymnastics, you kind of just do skill and explode and then you do the next skill. You know, jiu-jitsu's got a different kind of flow and movement to it, where you are doing techniques, but then you're having to connect them in a way too. So yeah, gymnastics definitely prepared me for that. I felt super ready. Yeah. Super, super ready. Just, it felt like I had to now apply these attributes I had to a different sport, but it was easy to transfer it, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, listen, after you're doing flying triangles on the first day, I mean, you prepare for everything. I say it's over. You can retire at that point.
you said a minute ago, I have the power to do whatever I want. Where did that come from? Because not a lot of 23-year-olds have that mindset, you know, and where did that develop? Was it already developed, or was it something you just that motivated you, or was it real? Did you really believe that?
I think it's just maybe something I've always had. And I know growing up, my parents never limited me to doing any certain thing. You know, they kind of encouraged me to explore whatever thing I was interested in. So I think I've always just had this idea of just, if you want something, go out and get it, you know? And I mean, maybe that also came from gymnastics too, growing up and like needing to do something very difficult and just kind of pushing through that. I was used to having that sort of mindset of, if you want something, just go get it. Mm-hmm. You know, it may not be easy, but it's going to be worth it. You know, that payoff is going to be worth it. So I think it's kind of a mixture of just, that's sort of how I am. I'm sort of a go-getter, but also just not having any self-limiting beliefs, you know, and just thinking, I want to do the thing that makes me happy, you know? And I think I really like the idea of not leading a traditional lifestyle. I never saw myself as someone who would do a regular 9-to-5 job. You know, I don't want to sit still that long. I don't want to be sitting at a desk. So I kind of always knew I would be doing something a little bit unusual with my life. And I like that idea. I like that idea of freedom and the idea of just being able to sort of make your reality what you want to make it and just look for that max amount of happiness that you can create for your life. I think it just takes a little bit of creativity to see, you know, and dig deep inside yourself and see what you really, really want rather than what other people are telling you you should do, you know, what seems normal and usual, but really digging inside and saying, okay, but what do I really want? What would I really want my life to look like to create this like happiness that I want in my life? So I think it's just, yeah, it's a mixture. It's a mixture of how I was probably raised and just how I am as a person.
Heather, are you a risk taker?
A risk taker?
Yeah. Like I'm listening to you, and like everything that, you know, this entire story, it's all about this unconventional approach to life. Like, I don't want to have 9 to 5, you know. I don't want to work just what I've been doing. I want to do something else, you know. I mean, I got my certs. I'm good. I'm teaching. But that's not enough. I want to do this crazy stuff, you know. And, you know, like, dig deeper. Where is this coming from? Why are you like adrenaline junkie? Like, where is this? Well, but no. But, like, do you see what I'm saying? Like, your entire life story, it's all about not even pushing the limits, but taking risks and chasing what you really, truly desire.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I think it seems so normal to me now. So talking about it with you, it's just like, oh, yeah. I mean, people don't normally do that. I think I also just had a good support system, too. I mean, I have people in my life telling me, you know, if you want this, go get it. You know, I didn't have people telling me, oh, you're crazy. You know, it was like, okay, if you want to do this, do this. I mean, my parents were definitely a little bit nervous because it's, you know, they want me to be stable and be able to make a living and stuff, but they weren't discouraging it. They kind of just, okay, well, if you want to do this, you know, let's think through it. I remember I didn't have a lot of savings when I was going out to move to California. So I had to think about how to make some money before leaving. So I remember getting on OfferUp and selling all of my furniture, making some extra money that way. And then just, you know, leaving and driving, you know, it's just, I just kind of knew I would find a job, you know, as quick as I could. But I definitely had this just feeling of, if I don't find a job quickly, I'm going to be in trouble, you know. But I knew I have a very good support system. So I knew if I got in a rough spot, I would have people I could turn to, but I don't want to have to do that. I'm a very independent person. But I also had people I knew out in California already. So I had a place to stay lined up. I moved out there with my partner. We're not together now, but I had that too. So I wasn't completely alone. And he was also pursuing jiu-jitsu full time. So it kind of felt like not too crazy because I knew other people who were also trying to do this thing. So it didn't feel like I was alone in this endeavor, if that makes sense. So it's crazy, but at the same time, I was looking at people who had done it or who were also wanting to do it. And so it felt, and maybe that normalized it a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like it. The support network really softened the blow, if you will, or took the risks, the sense of the risk away. Allowing to make, well, I mean, listen, life is all about making logical decisions, right? Or making smart decisions for you. So whatever works, right? It's what's good for you might not be good for somebody else, but as long as it works, you know, that's what's really important. Walk me through the process of making that decision, because moving across the country is not easy. Getting rid of all of your stuff, that's probably even harder. And then like moving across the country where you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, that's even scarier. I mean, 99.9% of people would not do it. I mean, just for those obvious reasons, right? How long does it take you from the idea of, let me think about this, well, maybe, the seed planting, to the point of like, all right, damn it, we are doing this.
Well, I knew, I mean, so I started jiu-jitsu and I met my partner pretty much right when I started. And I already knew at this point that he was planning to move out to California. And I already knew in the back of my mind that I wanted to move out to California. And I think it planted a seed of like, you could do jiu-jitsu full time. So that year of training, I think I was probably thinking about it a lot. And I was falling more and more in love with jiu-jitsu and this passion for jiu-jitsu and this realization of, I want to do this all the time. You know, I want to make this my life. So I think the seed was maybe planted very early on, that inspiration, you know, of this thing that you could do. So I think maybe that kind of warmed me up to the idea. And then fast forward a year later, he's out there, I'm selling all my stuff and I already have a place to go out there. So it felt very scary still, but it felt, I don't know, it just felt like it was meant to be, you know. It was very much my dream, but I also had, like I said, I had other people who were trying to do the same thing. So it made it feel less scary. And I think I'm also the type of person who, if something seems like it can't be done, it motivates me to do it more. So I like being that person where I'm like, dang, you're crazy. Like, I don't know if you can do this. I'm like, watch me. I'm going to do this. Like,
let me prove you wrong.
That was it too. Yeah. So even my parents, I mean, they're supportive, but at the same time, they're like, you're crazy. Are you sure you can do this? I'm like, I can do this. Yeah. I'm going to sell all my stuff. I need to get it out of my house anyways. I'm going to make some money. I'm going to hop in my car. You know, I knew I could probably find some kind of job as a personal trainer if I needed to. I ended up pursuing a job at Starbucks instead, though, because it just would take less mental energy so I could focus more on training. So I just kind of knew I had qualifications to be able to get a job, and I was confident in my ability to do that. But yeah, I mean, it was scary for sure. I'm not going to lie. It was definitely scary.
You know what's in my mind, at least, most mind-blowing part about your story is the fact that you are moving to California to pursue jiu-jitsu as a profession. Yet, we all know that you can't make money in jiu-jitsu as a white belt. Hold on. You probably cannot do as a blue belt. Wait a minute. The purple belt, maybe you can make a buck or two. Listen, I'm gonna go on the ledge right here and say, even if you are brown belt, I think it's hard to make money.
Even
black belt is difficult. Yeah, right. But I think once you achieve the rank of black belt, I think like people take you more seriously. But the point is, it takes, I mean, at the best case, 6, 8, maybe 10, for some people even longer. Years.
Average is 10 for sure.
So wait a minute. You move into let me get this straight, okay? You move into California as a white belt to pursue professional jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
Knowing that you are not gonna make serious money for another decade.
Yeah.
Heather, what's wrong with you?
I wasn't thinking about that. I literally wasn't thinking about that at all. I was thinking, I want this. I don't really know the path to, you know, get this yet, but I'm going to figure it out. Okay. You know, so I really wasn't thinking of it in that way. You know,
Were you pursuing it as a quote unquote profession or pursuing the training?
I was pursuing it as a profession. Okay. I knew initially it wouldn't be my full-time job. I'd need to, you know, probably do something else part-time, but I was pursuing it as a profession. I think at this time, I was thinking of it more as just, I'm going to be a competitor and somehow make money that way. Because, you know, when you start and you want to do it full time, your goal is black belt world champion. Like, that's right. What I want. So I was really just thinking of it from a competitor standpoint. You know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do well. I'm going to win and I'll get sponsors or figure out money, you know, along the way. And I wasn't thinking about it. I wasn't thinking about, wow, it's going to take you a long time to basically get this degree in jiu-jitsu to be able to make money from it. I was thinking, I need to make up for lost time. I started a little bit late. I need to get out to California right away if I want to get really good at this, if I want to be the best. So I always felt like I was, you know, chasing the clock. You know, I was just trying to catch up with everyone else. So I was just thinking, train, 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 you know, get caught up to everyone, surpass everyone. And that was like my focus. You know, I was really just thinking about it from that point of view and just thinking I'll figure it out, you know? But this is why I kind of went in the direction of going to Starbucks and working there. I knew I needed time to train. So I just kind of worked the minimum amount of hours and didn't have to put a lot of energy into it. So I could make jiu-jitsu more my full-time job, but it was still a lot. I mean, I remember, I had to go to comp class. I think it was at 10:45 back then. And so I would go open at Starbucks at 4:30 and I'd get off early and I'd go straight to comp class. And that, looking back on it now, that's crazy. I can't imagine. I can't imagine. I love my sleep. But back then I think it was just what I needed to do. So I just did it. You know, you just kind of make it happen. And I think I had the mental toughness from doing gymnastics. I was used to tough training. I missed tough training. So it didn't feel foreign, you know, it felt good to be back into that and competing and into a sport.
So you move across the country.
Keep going back to that.
Well, hold on. I'm moving away from that topic. Just I'm slow. Okay. I'm slow. I'm slow. But you're moving across the country at the very beginning of it, and you're changing, obviously, you're changing training facilities. Mm-hmm. And so it happens that you pick, well, some might say the best or the toughest place mm-hmm. to train in San Diego. I mean, Atos mm-hmm. is not pushover. I mean, it is what it is, right? This is where champions are being produced.
Yep.
What is your perspective going from East Coast to West Coast, changing the facilities, changing the styles, changing mm-hmm. the instruction perspective, going from, you know, what appears to me as a very small team to one of the largest teams? I mean, this is all about black and whites here, right? What is your perspective? Like, what was the first day stepping at Atos on the mat?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, it was overwhelming, but in a good way. I mean, I knew starting at the small gym I started at, I loved the gym. You know, it was a great group of people, but I knew if I wanted to be the best, it wasn't the environment that would do that for me. You know, so I knew if I wanted to get really good at jiu-jitsu, I needed to go train with the best people. I needed to go train at the best academy in the world. So I knew I needed to get out to California as quickly as possible because I was basically just wasting time at my first gym if I didn't, you know. I was wasting precious training time. So I needed to get to the best academy. So that was Atos. I mean, California in general is kind of the mecca of jiu-jitsu. One of them now, we've got like New York and Texas too. But back then, California was mm-hmm. the spot. And it's right next to Worlds and everything. So I knew that's where I needed to go if I wanted to be the best. I needed to just plop myself into the heart of it, essentially. So I was going to go to other gyms in the area to make sure I found the place that I wanted. But the first time I walked into Atos, it felt like it was the place to be. I remember it being very important to me to have not only a legend of the sport head instructor, Andre Galvao, but also I wanted to have a good female role model as well. So his wife, Angelica, was mm-hmm. exactly that. She was still competing back then too. And literally the first day I tried it was the same day they started the women's program. So she was starting her like competitors, her group of women, you know, so it all felt like it just lined up. It felt like this is where I need to be. They're very welcoming because I was worried coming in as a white belt, I wouldn't get the time of day, you know, I wouldn't get any attention. I was afraid there'd be favoritism. They just wouldn't even really look at me, you know, because I was just a little white belt. But I didn't feel that at all when I walked in there. I mean, the training was insanely hard, but the support was there too. Everyone was, you know, taken care of. You weren't looked at differently being a lower belt. I remember feeling like they didn't doubt my goals, even though I was a little bit older, I felt like. They said, work hard, show up, and, you know, you'll do it. You'll achieve it. So they believed in me. So it was definitely extremely difficult, but that's what I was looking for. I knew that's what I needed. If I wanted to be the best, I needed that really hard training. I needed, you know, that support system, a coach that I could look up to. And so I found everything I needed at Atos. I mean, I walked in and I just knew it was meant to be. I mean, it was still really small. I mean, now it's a huge gym, but when I got there, they're in their smaller location. And, but the training, the people who were there training were top notch, you know, not a lot, but everyone was like world champ level. So it was the room you wanted to be in for sure. And the women came in like pretty quickly because Angelica sort of rallied everyone. And it was just, she gave us a lot of one-on-one attention to kind of help bring us up. We were like her first little kids, you know, so she brought us out. I think I was maybe her first belt promotion. So I was there like,
you
right
mean from
the
white
beginning.
To blue?
Yeah. From white to blue. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So now looking back 10 years back, you, mm-hmm. you go through all these ranks and mm-hmm. you just a second ago, you mentioned you are Angelica's first promotion or one of the first ones. You are one of the mm-hmm. first seeds that's being planted for Atos female representation, if you will. Whatever we want to call it, right? The presence of women in jiu-jitsu. in which now it's big, right? I mean, now it's a huge presence, right? It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you find yourself, do you ever think of yourself as one of the originals at Atos? One of the first ones? I mean, it's been 10 years after all.
Yeah, it has. Yeah. I don't. I mean, every once in a while I do. I guess it just feels weird to be like, I'm an OG. Yeah. I feel weird saying that, you know, because I felt like there are other people who are there before me, right? You know, so I feel weird. But I think out of the original people, I'm one of the few still at Atos. I mean, because you get to a point where you get your black belt, you compete, and then you want to go do your own thing. So you kind of leave the nest. So I'm definitely one of the few leftover OGs, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. And I am the first female to be with them from white to black belt. So I'm the very first black belt female who received all belts from.
So you might belt. So you might be an OG in denial, but
I might. Man, I'm not gonna say it. You say it.
Take credit. But listen, like jokes aside, it has to feel really refreshing, and there has to be a sense of pride behind all of this. Not only this remarkable story of changing, making a forklift change in your life, but also even within, you know, the second part of your life at Atos, not only mm-hmm. going through all the ranks, not only being fundamental parts of building the system that Atos and Andre and Angelica have built, but also mm-hmm. carrying on what they have built. Because now, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but you are the one who people look up to.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. Yeah.
There is a sense of very humble personality that I'm sensing with you. Like it's a risk taker, but but look, I mean, how many women look up to you? I mean, don't even say it, but like, you know, in person, it has to be a lot. And then you have enormous online presence, which gives this vehicle to, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people around mm-hmm. the world who mm-hmm. either start or carry on jiu-jitsu because of what you do.
Yeah.
All right, don't be humble. Don't be humble. You cannot say the entire time. I'm going to dig deeper.
That's a lot of pressure. I do think about it sometimes. I think it's hard to bring it from a thought and then really let it sink in and be a reality of, wow, I do have a lot of, you know, I inspire. I don't really think about it like that. I mean, it's a lot of pressure too. I think more, how can I use this, you know? Cause I think being a female in jiu-jitsu, it's rough. I mean, it's rough making money as a male. So being a female in jiu-jitsu, it's hard. So I know recently I've really thought about what can I do for the younger generation of girls, you know, who want to train jiu-jitsu. How can I just show them it's possible so they don't have this thought of like, oh, I don't know if I can do it. I don't want them to even think that. So I think more about how can I use it. I don't just sit in the, wow, like people look up to me, you know, I don't sit in that so often. But
yeah, I don't mean it in that sense. I don't mean it in a negative way that, you know, your head is bigger than it actually is. But what I'm saying is, like, you do make impact. And I think, you know, somebody at some point needs to say it and acknowledge that, because I think that's huge. I mean, without people like you, women probably would not train jiu-jitsu. Listen, correct me if I'm wrong, but walking into a male-dominated jiu-jitsu academy is not easy, is it?
No.
Now,
it's not. For me, it kind of felt easy, but for most, it's not. Right. I had a very welcoming gym, for sure.
We put that aside. We put the welcomeness aside. Training jiu-jitsu for females, mm-hmm. it's not easy, is it?
No, not at all. I mean, because jiu-jitsu is not easy when you're starting out. Right. And then add into that, everyone's way bigger and stronger than you.
Yeah.
So it's hard. I mean, you'll try to do a move that you learned and it doesn't even feel like you're doing it correct because the body you're doing on it is so much bigger than you. So it makes everything more difficult. Luckily, I had one other woman who I trained with pretty consistently. So, but a lot of women, they don't have anyone their same size. Mm-hmm. So I mean, that's another reason I knew I had to go to a gym, you know, with training partners. I had to have that, you know, you don't want to train with people bigger than you. And then the first time you train it with someone your size, you're competing against them. Mm-hmm. Everything feels so different. It's a faster pace. They're way more flexible. The game's different. So the whole, it changes everything. So it's definitely really tough being a female out there. And then, I mean, sometimes it's not even a welcoming environment. People think, oh, like, you can't do this. And just the act of going into the gym takes so much bravery. So the fact that people think, oh, you can't do this, like, they're already there. Like, they can do this. They took the hardest first step by walking in. So I think, yeah, not enough credit is given those women who train, especially the ones who don't have any other females to train with, which is less typical than it used to be. But
yeah, I mean, definitely growing in a large way, but the percentages are, I mean, it is still, you know, male dominated sport. I mean, no matter how you slice it, just from numbers perspective, but again, it continues growing, and that's the important part. So that's the, you know, you're a huge contributor in that sense. And at least that's my view. What do I know? I mean, that's just my perspective.
I appreciate it.
You said you were going to use it, to motivate or to help others. In what ways are you doing that, other than just maybe leading by example?
I think example is probably the biggest. It's much easier. I mean, even when I was making my move out to San Diego, seeing people who were also doing it, that gives you something to look at and be like, it's possible. So I think that's huge. Just having a role model of, oh, this person's doing it. Now I can imagine me doing it as well. You know, it's hard to imagine it when you don't see anyone there doing it. So I think that's huge. Just seeing someone else do it, I think it's huge. You know, women leading mixed classes and teaching, and it just being normal. Like, it's just, I'm just another person and I know a lot of jiu-jitsu. Let me share it with you. You know, it doesn't have to be anything different. But it is nice for people to see, you know, a woman in a leadership position. It just makes it more normal, as it should be. And then I think just my social media, I didn't really think I'm going to become an influencer. I'm going to get a bunch of followers, you know, like that was not.
There's people that do though.
It's weird to even call myself that. I just knew to get my name out there and to get sponsors and that kind of thing, I needed to have a good social media following. I think it's the norm now, you know, a lot of things are done online, so you need to have that presence. So I just started posting consistently every day. And I think of it as just a way that I can reach out into the community as a whole. I mean, I think it's so cool to be able to obviously teach in person and everything, but to have the opportunity to have this platform where you can reach everyone. I mean, that's so cool. I can help so many people through that avenue. So just, you know, that's a big way I reach out into the community and try to, you know, be that role model. I mean, teaching is another way for sure. Teaching kids, it's not something I've done a lot of, but I've been thinking about it recently that might be something that I want to explore a little bit. Just because I think
are you stepping into the dark side
Don't
of
do it.
Kids jiu-jitsu?
Don't do it.
I want to do everything. I want to do it all. You know, I don't want any limiting. Like, I think it would be cool. I think it's cool to see that side of it too. So.
A moment ago, you said visualization and trying to picture what the future is like and trying to visualize the simple things that if she can do it, I can do it, especially from a women perspective. Do you think that the act of visualizing things, what the goals are, what you're chasing, what you want to become or be or achieve, is that important part of all of this, of the success?
I think so. I think it's very important to have goals and to visualize where you want to be. I think I kind of thought when I heard people explain it, oh, like you need to visualize and put it out into the universe. I thought like, it sounds kind of, I don't know. It sounds kind of weird.
Nerdy.
But when I sit down and I'm more logical about it and I think about it, it makes sense. I mean, because you're always told to make goals, you know, and I mean, even with jiu-jitsu, like your goal is to submit the person, right? Imagine if we're just rolling and there is no goal, like you're not going to have any specific, you know, path to where you're going. Cause you're just going to be all over the place. So I think it can be like that with life too. You need to have your goal in mind. You need to visualize it. And then I think it's just going to kind of fall into place that you'll take the steps you need to take to get there. But if you're just going through life and you've got no end goal or no future you're visualizing, I mean, you're going to be a little bit all over the place.
Yeah, and that's like coasting through life, right? Coasting through jujitsu, just kind of floating. And you know, at that point, we probably, or somebody is asking themselves whether they are making progress. And oftentimes, that's the first step, the invisible but very first step of the exit route, right? Like, how many times you've seen that before, where we lose interest, and it's all because of the progress is not happening, and that is because there is oftentimes we don't have objectives that we're trying to achieve and we're not chasing them, right? I mean, it's all a big part of it. In the last 10 years, I'm sure you've seen plenty of people come and go, no?
Yeah, it's definitely a thing. You know, a new person shows up and they are wanting to be a world champ competitor. I think we all kind of have this moment where I love that for you. I want you to, but we'll see. They come and they go. It's hard. It's very hard. It's hard to make money. It's hard to, keep doing it. It's definitely not for everyone. But I mean, it's just, if you really want it, I think any new skill you want to learn, it's just, you have to really want it to go through the portion where you're not good at it. So it's just, it really depends on that, how bad you want to get good at something. That's going to dictate how long you're okay with being bad at it, basically.
You just said it's not for everybody. Many out there say jiu-jitsu is for everybody. So which one is it? You're contradicting a big statement in jiu-jitsu.
No, not for everyone, as in doing it full time.
Oh,
doing it
full-time. I see.
Like a competitor.
Do you think jiu-jitsu is for everybody?
I think everyone could reap benefits from doing jiu-jitsu, but I think everyone needs to figure out what type of training is right for them. I think sometimes the line between hobbyist and competitor can get blurred, and people think they need to go crazy with their training and like do it as much as they can, and they sort of burn themselves out when really like they're just going in there to enjoy it. You know, if you look at like any other hobbies people have, they're not grinding away and like trying to do it every hour of the day they can. It's they go to do it because they enjoy it. So I think having the right mindset about it of like get good at it quickly, but enjoy it. Just you're doing this because you like it.
But it's hard, isn't it? Like, look, like, I mean, jiu-jitsu is everywhere now. Like almost every weekend, every other weekend, there is something going on in either online or on TV or in person or in the local tournament, and a lot of it is shifting to this competitive jiu-jitsu, which is phenomenal. Yeah. Right. But then I don't know what the percentages are, but like 90% of people are probably not competitors. They're, just hobbyist, somebody who's just enjoying it for the sake of doing an activity or disconnecting for the reality of life. But how does this majority of jiu-jitsu community, which is non-competitive, is disconnected, needs to disconnect, at least mentally, from this competitive approach, which is working against them now because they will get burned out. And that's one of the biggest problems every instructor has, right? Like creating these separations and logical decisions behind it.
For sure. Yeah. I think it's hard. I mean, I've thought about this before. Why do people get so obsessed with jiu-jitsu where other hobbies, people are more chill? I think really what it comes down to is ego. You're literally, if you're bad at jiu-jitsu, you're getting beat up, and that does not feel nice. So I think it kind of comes down to that. I think it comes down to finding that balance of, of course you want to protect your ego and you want to win, but you need to learn how to accept loss. You need to be able to reframe, this training session, I'm working on this position I'm bad at. Winning this day is not winning the round. It's getting to this position or it's doing this. So I think you need to bring fun and game into jiu-jitsu again. It's not really a fight for the death kind of thing, So I think maybe it's on the instructor to do more positional training where there's more of a fun goal in the training and you're not thinking, I need to win this round, So I think it's just kind of becoming more flexible in your mindset for your training, because this is also going to open up your game. You're going to explore a lot more. You're going to have more fun. So I think it's just kind of loosening up people and just bringing fun back into it, because that's how it should be. I mean, there should be the competitiveness. There's a time and a place for that too, but it should be fun. You should go and you enjoy hanging out with your friends, enjoy training, enjoy improving, and then, be okay with losing sometimes. So I think it's kind of comes down to that. Just bringing the fun back into it.
But come on, Heather. Come on. Drilling is boring. Like
everybody
wants to.
She didn't say
positional
drilling.
Positional training is boring. We want to go and submit everybody because that's what we do. No.
Yeah, I know. It's got to be both. I'm a rare, exception. I love drilling. I love positional training because I love the feeling of getting better at something. And I think we all do. So I think if you can appreciate positional training for what it is and feel, wow, I was so productive, I'm better at this position, then it's easier to enjoy it because it can feel very overwhelming to go to training. I think that's another reason people don't stick with it. It's overwhelming, all the techniques you need to learn. So if you can kind of reel it in and you can make someone feel like they took the session to be very specific and get good at this technique or this position, that's going to be a lot more encouraging than they just went and rolled and they got, just beat up for an hour. So I think obviously you need to roll too, but I think it's just, you need to have balance. You need to have that skill development, which I don't think there's enough of that in jiu-jitsu. We all just want to roll all the time, but you have to develop skills.
I think the flip side's the same, right? Because if you get those beginners or guys that have been in it for a year or two who initially are wrecking everybody, people catch up because they're working on their technique. And then that blue belt that was beating everybody is now on the other side, and then they disappear too, right? So I think it's all balance, whether you're submitting people or not.
I don't remember who said it. We had a guest on the show who said this. Jiu-jitsu is one of those handful sports or even the only one that we want to spar all the time. If you look at any other professional sport, nobody does this. Like you don't see basketball players playing game four times a day. They play game once a week or twice a week. But all the practices are very narrow, very specific, developing a skill set.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think jiu-jitsu is, it's getting better and better, but it's behind in a lot of ways. And I think that's definitely one of the glaring, obvious ways that it's still a little bit behind other sports. You even just look at wrestling. Wrestlers train freaking hard, but they're not doing the same amount of live rounds that we are. I mean, they're, like you said, doing a lot of drilling, a lot of skill development. And I mean, even just the mental side of things, that's something that can be lacking too. Just it's because it's tough to do jiu-jitsu. It's tough on the ego. So the mental side of it is definitely a big thing too. I remember that being a big thing that I was missing when I first started competing. I was really good in the training room, but I had to do a lot of mental work to then transfer that into competition. I think the ratios we have with the training rounds and the skill development is for the most part really out of whack.
This could be the contribution to all this. It could be the simple fact that jiu-jitsu is still very young and developing as a sport overall in general. I mean, it's, truly, what would you say, 20 years? I mean, jiu-jitsu really has started growing in a sense that it has been growing. When IBJJF kind of started doing their presence has started growing, that this is really where this competitive jiu-jitsu started beginning. But truly, like in the last few years, 5, 7, maybe 10 years, sure. Right? I mean, like, do we even call jiu-jitsu as a professional sport yet? I mean, like, there's maybe 5 guys who really make money on it, and rest of, like, I don't know. Like, this is the area where, like, okay, we want to be professional, but are we really? Like, who is really making a living on jiu-jitsu?
I mean, there's a lot of ways that it's still not at all professional. Yeah. I mean, and just the last 10 years since I started, it's changed so much. It's grown so much. People they know what it is now. I feel like when I first started, people didn't always know what it was. And starting later, like I did, was okay back then. But now you have to start really, really young. You got to be a black belt by your 19 or 20.
19, yeah.
But I mean, there's a lot of ways that jiu-jitsu is not professional yet. I mean, you look at even just some of the reffing we saw from ADCC, just the rules are not consistent. In other sports, they will basically have a press release to say sorry, we messed up. Like, we're not going to do that again. But in jiu-jitsu, I mean, we don't have that kind of level of professionalism. The refs just kind of normally don't admit when they've made a bad call. They just kind of try to make excuses and what's the standard then? You know, how can we be professional and we know the rules if the rules aren't consistent? So you see that in IBJJF. Unfortunately, we saw that a little bit ADCC. So, I mean, that's obviously we need to be more professional in that area. Even just, I don't know, it's a hard spectator sport too. So, I mean, a way that sports make money is through spectators, and that's the hobbyist, which is the majority of the sport, but it can be hard to understand what's going on. So part of me is thinking maybe we need to change the rules so that it's more spectator friendly, then more people will be fans and more money for all the competitors.
Or it is a tricky balance, isn't it? I mean, it is a tricky balance, right? It is. This is probably why, you know, no gi is becoming more quote unquote paid sport, because it is a little bit more entertaining for visual, from a visual perspective. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Where versus gi often is considered as by far more technical. Right. Which there is a little inches, little things happening under the hood. And well, let's just be honest. That's not so entertaining for those who watch it. Right. So it is
not at all.
At the same time, we do have to acknowledge that the growth has taken place in the last 10 years is enormous. And I think when we look 10 years out in the future, we're going to be talking about very, very different position that jiu-jitsu as a sport is, and I think all the athletes are leading into that professional opportunity, you know, to really make a living off of it. And you know, I think that's a great thing.
It's definitely moving in the right direction. I'm excited to see where it goes for sure. And it's crazy to see just the gap that's widening between competitor and hobbyist. It's almost like a completely different type of jiu-jitsu, you know, that the competitors are doing and then the hobbyists are doing. So, I mean, even just that gap getting wider, I mean, it's a good thing because that means, you know, it's getting to be more professional. But I think also it would be nice to be able to close that gap in some ways too. So I think, you know, having more teachers, instructors to help the hobbyists understand the competitors and to help kind of bridge that gap a little bit. It's hard to find really good instructors in jiu-jitsu. So that's something that we're lacking. But we need the communication if we're going to keep spreading the knowledge of jiu-jitsu. So having good instructors, doing the courses, I mean, that's a good way to make money in jiu-jitsu as well, because you want to make people feel like they can do it too. So if you can start kind of bridging that gap and helping people understand what's going on, that's going to help as well, I think.
I think we have we are in a great time of jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu evolution, if you will. You know, I think what's ahead of us is really going to bring a lot of good things. You know, well, we just got to stick around long enough to see what's going to happen. But that's a big part of it. Heather, as we kind of creeping onto the hour of this entire conversation, before we start wrapping things up, what we do at the end of every episode, we have a question for you from our previous guest. He had no clue that you will be answering it. Okay, so think of it as question and blind question in dark. Okay, Gary is going to take a lead on that. He's going to ask you the question and it's going to just generate interesting end to the conversation.
Yeah, so this is from our last guest, Jeff Serafin, who holds a special place in my heart. But what is the best jiu-jitsu advice you have ever been given?
Deep.
We can go hard deep. To just. One thing.
Got to do it. I know what mine is. I've known it. As soon as I heard it, I knew what it was. I was like, that's going to stick with me.
Knew what yours was?
Not when Jeff, but when the person said it to me on the mat, I was like, that's going to stick with me for forever.
Really? Like,
Yep.
Come on, Heather. What is it?
Okay. So I think for me, the aha moment, because I mean, I have a lot of things I could say, but I think a big aha moment for me was when someone told me that I needed to be present in my roles. So that means when you're rolling, you need to be thinking about what they're doing, what you're doing, because the whole thing that like the thing that's going to get you better at jiu-jitsu is being aware of where your holes are in your game. So if you're not present in your round and paying attention to what's happening, it's going to be really hard for you to problem solve and fix your mistakes. You're going to make the same mistakes over and over and over, and you're going to waste a lot of time. So if you can be present in your roles and think of the moments where you didn't know what to do, or they did something to you, or you felt like you were just lacking a technique, then that's going to help you a lot. So taking notes after class and writing all those things down. I remember as soon as I was able to do that, my game skyrocketed because I would just write down everything that happened in my roles and just every little thing. I just, okay, that's fixed. That's fixed. Next thing, that's fixed. Okay, now I need another option there. That's fixed. So it really, my whole game just started coming together and all those little gaps I had in it just were getting, I was just putting in the answer, like a little slot, like, okay, now this one's figured out, now this one. So I feel like for me, that completely changed my jiu-jitsu, just being able to be present.
Essentially what you're saying, being very intentional with what you do on the mat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's easy to turn off your brain in the roles. I mean, that's definitely part of the fun of it too, right? Just like move through the positions. But if you can be more intentional and present, you're going to improve way faster.
Awesome. Amazing. Yeah. Heather, as we're wrapping this up, if anybody has been living under the rock and they don't know who you are online and where to find you and the all the great things that you do online, well, where can you be found?
So I'm on Instagram. My handle is Heather_MorganBJJ. And I also have a YouTube channel. I use the same handle for everything. So Heather_MorganBJJ for YouTube. I have a TikTok as well, but I need to be better about posting on there, but it is there. So I have that. And then I will be making a website soon. I'm making it right now. So pretty soon I'll have that and hopefully have an online platform there. I have some courses as well that you can find on my Instagram. You just have to go to my bio and you can find those. And more things to come for sure. I'm recording another course right now. So I'll have more info out there for you guys. So,
and as always, we'll post all the links in the show notes. So if you guys want to connect with Heather or look at some of her instructionals or in some capacity, follow her, feel free to click on the links below. And definitely good to keep that communication open and continue helping the community grow. Heather, thank you for being here. That's number one. Number two, thank you for doing what you do and really continue impacting the community in the way that you do. But I think more importantly, I want to say congratulations to you because people chase the dreams, or they want to chase the dream, but rarely any of them truly get to them, and they truly can live the life that they desired at the beginning. And you are, you know, you are a true example that dreams do come true, and I do think that you are a lucky cat in some way that you can do what you love. So, you know, congratulations on that. That's an amazing story.
Thank you. Gary? Thanks so much. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I just want to say thanks as well. And I think that, you know, touching on what Thomas said, a lot of people talk about visualization and making it happen, but I think what they miss is that you have to do the work in between. And I think you touched on that, and that's great. And I also just want to thank you for your acceptance of being a role model. It seems like a lot of people push back on that nowadays for some reason. And I think it's truly important to, when you have the responsibility that you have, to step up like that. So thank you.
My pleasure.
So humble, always so humble. All right, Heather, let's wrap this up for today. Thanks for hanging out with us and chatting and sharing your story. We'll be sitting on the sidelines and watching as you continue making the impact.
Thank you so much. Nice to meet both of you.
Thank you for listening to Raw Radio. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to leave us a review and help us make the show even more amazing. For future episodes, check out our website and follow us on all major podcast platforms. Take care.